What can you expect if you take these issues to court? The issues of the unlawfulness, the lack of constitutional support, that is, for the Income Tax Act of Canada, the lack of constitutional support for provincial income taxes being transferred to the federal government, the issues concerning the banks controlling our money and issuing fiat currency out of nothing and enslaving us, and the fact that the government is an unlawful criminal organization, well, you can expect to lose. It's unfortunate, but that is the way it is. However, we have studied their laws and have found a way to defeat them without ever having to go to court. Here is why you will lose in court. The Supreme Court of Canada said in Attorney General versus the Law Society of British Columbia, 1982, there is, however, another aspect to this issue. The provincial superior courts have always occupied a position of prime importance in the constitutional pattern of this country. They are the descendants of the royal courts of justice as courts of general jurisdiction. They cross the dividing line, as it were, in the federal-provincial scheme of division of jurisdiction, being organized by the provinces under Section 92, Sub 14 of the Constitution Act, and are presided over by judges appointed and paid by the federal government. Your opponent, paid by the federal government, the Crown Attorney, paid by the federal government, the court staff, paid by either the provincial or federal governments, depending on the level of the court, the judge, paid by the federal or provincial governments, again depending on the level of court, you may be able to see why presenting the truth will not matter. Their job is to convict you, and justice does not matter. The only thing that matters is their paychecks. In a recent trial of a client of mine who was convicted of failure to produce books and records, I had this to say to the judge. I had anticipated that I would be denied the right to represent him, so I had myself placed on the board of directors, thereby giving me the right to speak for the corporation. This is what I had to say. When we last appeared before you, I reminded you of your conflict of interest, a conflict that I feared would place you in a position where bias was unavoidable. This conflict of interest centers around the fact that you are appointed by the provincial government and paid from the Ontario Consolidated Revenue Fund, a fund that receives at least some of its revenue from the administrative and collection activities under the Income Tax Act of Canada, the very act that is at issue in this case. On page 82 of the transcript of these proceedings, the Crown asks, and I quote, "Are we to conclude then we cannot find a judicial appointment in the Dominion of Canada that can process these?" And what he was referring to, by the way, was charges under the Income Tax Act of Canada. The answer is a resounding yes. That is exactly what we are to conclude. Under the present system of appointment and remuneration by the federal and provincial governments, with payments of salaries and expenses from revenues generated at least in part by the Income Tax Act of Canada, it is obvious there exists a conflict of interest that leads any informed observer to conclude that there exists on the part of any accused under provisions of the Act a reasonable apprehension of bias. On the same page, page 82, the Crown further states, there were several provincial court judges in Toronto that raised the issue, and it is totally without merit. If the judges themselves raised the issue, it obviously could not be totally without merit. Further, the case in question is Valenti versus the Queen of 1986. In this case, the court was not even considering the onerous situation where a judge is a trier of facts and attempting to administer justice under the Income Tax Act, a statute which raises revenue from which their own salaries are paid. At pages 82 to 83 of the transcript of these proceedings, Your Honor states that, "I have been completely open-minded on the issue and am prepared to be persuaded by argument of either counsel, and there is no one here biased any more than there would be in any other judge at any superior court level." We take very little comfort from this statement, which should certainly not dispel our reasonable apprehension of bias. It is no different than saying, "I am no more biased towards Canadians than any other Canadian would be." The conflict is obvious and irrefutable, involving the Income Tax Act issue. As in the case before this court today, it is not you or your character that are at issue. It is the undeniable pressure that you are under to administratively deal with income tax matters. However, Even as I brought this conflict to your attention and expressed our reasonable apprehension of bias, you ruled that you could be unbiased and would be hearing the case. I have no doubt that you can be unbiased. However, if you do render a truly unbiased decision, then your future on the bench will be in considerable jeopardy from those very individuals who appointed you in the first place. You then proceeded at the coaching and urging via hand signals from the Crown to not only demonstrate your overwhelming bias, but unequivocally deny us our rights and my client the representation of his choice. To punish us in any way for being legally illiterate is analogous to punishing someone who comes to your court illiterate, period, in the common vernacular of being unable to read and comprehend and is punished for being so. In 1996, the John Howard Society urged the Canadian judiciary to increase public confidence in the judicial system by not punishing people for being untrained in court procedures. It, in fact, may well be a breach of fundamental justice. I have contemplated making application to the Superior Court for an order of mandamus. I have contemplated filing a complaint with the Attorney General. I have even contemplated charging you with obstruction of justice. In the end, however, I have decided to see this process through and determine if you will, when the chips are down, administer justice as it is your sworn duty to do. In order to have some of our key evidence entered on the record as exhibits, I was forced to resort to having myself sworn as a witness and consequently subjected to the irrational, provocative, and personalized attacks of the Crown. This was all necessary because you were committed to denying us the ability to provide full answer and defense. At times, you yourself asked some alarmingly revealing questions, such as what my authority was for asking questions of my public servant. Although you did not word it exactly that way, it is exactly what you meant. Those are quotes from what I said to the judge in a court case not that long ago. And I said a lot of other things, of course, but she ruled against us because it does not matter what the truth is. I even presented some of the court cases that I've quoted from in this presentation. It did not matter. It is very evident that these judges are biased. Even after this admonition, the judge, in an 11-minute judgment, found my client guilty. We had many other issues, but I just want you all to understand that this obvious bias has been pointedly brought to the court's attention, and it has no effect. They continue to administer public policy, that is the government's agenda, at the expense of justice and truth. We must remember that there is no constitution in Canada for a variety of reasons, the main one being that it has been suspended by the introduction and adherence to the Bills of Exchange Act. When you enter a court, you are under Roman law and in an admiralty jurisdiction, meaning you are guilty until you are proven innocent, and the law is what the judge says it is. However, it is not good enough to sit back and allow someone else to become educated and to take the action necessary to protect you. You must do it yourself. Otherwise, you will be like the German citizen Mueller, who wrote after the Second World War, "I watched as they came for the communist, and since I was not a communist, I stood by and did nothing. I watched as they came for the Jew, and since I was not a Jew, I stood by and did nothing. I watched as they came for my neighbor, and still I stood by and did nothing. Then one day, they came for me, and suddenly I realized there was no one left to do anything." I would now like to just touch upon one of the cases, the only case really of any significance that the federal government uses in any situation that is brought before the courts challenging the constitutionality of income tax, which we have recently done, and we do not know the results yet because we haven't got to trial. And it's the Caron case. And I'd like to just mention that the Caron case is not really law, because it's the only case of any relevance that they use. I will deal with it, however. This decision was also made by the Privy Council, the highest court of appeal in Canada at the time, that is 1924. This court was abandoned in 1949 in favor of the Supreme Court of Canada being the highest appeal court in Canada. The Privy Council in the Caron versus King case of 1924, which was an appeal from the Supreme Court of Canada, the court appeared to have been under pressure to satisfy the need for revenues by the government of Canada as a result of Canada's immense efforts in supporting the British government in the First World War of 1914 to 18. At least this is what the federal government touted as their justification in its argument at that time. Time has given us a much different picture on this claim. We now know that the real reason for the national debt is the fact that the federal government gave its money creation powers to the private chartered banks in 1913, and from that time borrowed itself into debt, being the only way they could raise revenues other than indirect taxation. Using this deceitful reason, the federal government implemented the controversial Income Tax Act of 1917. However, the public and the Privy Council ate it, hook, line, and sinker. It was for this reason that the Privy Council made the decision it made in the Caron case. It not only reversed itself from its numerous previous decisions on this subject, but in order to do so, it broke one of the cardinal rules of statute interpretation. It added words to the Constitution. The court added the words "for Dominion purposes" in three places in the official court report, thus justifying the government of Canada's right to continue imposing direct income taxation within a province. Regardless of the rationale used by the court to justify its decision, it was an irrational and unlawful decision. The court, by adding words not found in our so-called Constitution, simply violated the rules of statute interpretation and did something that they were simply not permitted to do, and that is make law. Additionally, the Supreme Court of Canada in the Lord Nelson Hotel case returned to reality when rendering its decision in 1951 and once again recognized the divisions of power and the watertight compartments, quote-unquote, thereof. The court even went so far as to quote from one of the decisions of the Privy Council that we use, namely the Bank of Toronto versus Lamb of 1887, when it said, "Their lordships adhere to that view," and held that, as regards direct taxation within the province to raise revenue for provincial purposes, that subject falls wholly within the jurisdiction of the provincial legislatures. I have provided overwhelming authoritative proof that income tax is currently structured in all provinces except Quebec is totally unlawful, and in accordance with subsection 52(1) of Schedule B of the Constitution Act, the Income Tax Act of Canada is of no force or effect, since it contravenes the Constitution Act. However, I would like to say that the decision does exist, and it is a decision that is different from the previous decisions of the Privy Council on this issue. Therefore, I would like to reference two legal maxims that will put this decision in perspective. The first is this: the Caron case did not overturn or even consider the Bank of Toronto versus Lamb or the Citizens Insurance Company versus Parsons cases in its decision. These effectively violate the legal maxim res judica pro verite, which means, until reversed, a judicial decision is conclusive and its truth may not be contradicted. The Caron case did not overturn the previous two decisions. The previous two decisions remain law and are binding upon any lower court, which means basically any court in Canada. The second is that the Caron case did not follow precedent or case law. The legal maxim violated in this instance is the maxim of stare decisis, the principle by which a precedent or decision of one court binds courts lower in the judicial hierarchy. Thus, the Caron case is not valid law for the reasons that it used words not in the Constitution when making its decision, and it violated two legal maxims by ignoring its own decisions in six previous cases on this issue and failed to overturn them, meaning that the Bank of Toronto and the Citizens Insurance cases are still law in Canada today. This, coupled with the Supreme Court of Canada's reference to the Bank of Toronto case in its 1951 decision in the Lord Nelson Hotel case, proves conclusively that the two decisions that we rely upon are still law, the Lord Nelson Hotel decision being made some 27 years after the Caron decision. Of course, I would like to take this opportunity to point out once again that Canada does not have a constitution. As proof, let's look at two different dictionary definitions of the word constitution. Osborne's Concise Law Dictionary states this: 1. Those laws, institutions, and customs which combine to create a system of government to which the community regulated by those laws accedes. And 2. The written document embodying those laws. Black's Law Dictionary defines constitution as this: the organic and fundamental law of a nation or state, which may be written or unwritten, establishing the character and conception of its government, laying the basic principles to which its internal life is to be conformed, organizing the government and regulating, distributing, and limiting the functions of its different departments, and prescribing the extent and manner of the exercise of sovereign powers, a character of government deriving its whole authority from the governed, the written instrument agreed upon by the people of the Union. I don't know about you, but I have never been asked to vote on or have any input into our so-called Constitution. I would like to point out here that not only do we not have a Constitution, the Act of the Imperial Parliament of England that Trudeau so deceitfully repatriated and called a Constitution is being routinely violated by the federal government. The federal government has intruded upon provincial government powers in areas of taxation, subsection 92.2, property and civil rights, section 92, subsection 13, with the gun law as only one example, health care, section 92.7, with the national health care natural resources under section 92A, with the national energy program, and the list goes on. Join us in our efforts. Support us by becoming a member of We the People of Canada organization by visiting our website at wethepeopleofcanada.com. Membership is free. Our purpose is to bring the people of Canada together in an effort to bring about the changes necessary to save our government and sever the chains of bondage that bind us to the international bankers. The present debauched monetary system, being fiat currency created out of nothing by the private banks, the only purpose of which is to steal our wealth and enslave us all. What we have learned about the system of today is that they have managed to accomplish the prophecy by creating a mirror image of us all, and have, through several of the millions of laws the government has created, made merchandise out of us all. We are the collateral for the national debt. Our birth certificates are bought and sold, and our labor is hypothecated for the worthless pieces of paper currency that has enslaved us all. If you do not believe what I say, simply write your name in the manner that it was given to you by your parents. Your name is written with each name beginning with a capital letter followed by lowercase letters. This is the correct way and the way we were all taught in school. This is also supported by the Canadian Styles Manual, a government publication. Now look at the name on the province's driver's license. Who is that? It certainly cannot be you. What has happened is that the government has created a mirror image of you, and as such, they have taken control of you because you admit to being that legal fiction, the all-capital name, or some other variation of your real name. I have just brought this to your attention to let you know and to understand that something is going on and that we have figured it out. We now use their laws to our advantage. This can be accomplished by you as well. I leave you with this one very important thought about taxes and the debauched monetary system that we have today in Canada and all other countries of the world with the exception of the Islamic world. Taxes provide us with nothing. All taxes are used to return the worthless paper currency back to the banks who created it. Once we cut through the smoke and mirrors and get by the idea that government needs money to provide us with roads and health care and pay interest on the national debt, we come to the realization that taxes are simply a means of stealing our wealth and enslaving us all. Proof of this is contained in an understanding of this next statement. I said it earlier, but it bears repeating. The country and all its natural resources belong to the people. The government is our servant and our trustee. The government, being our trustee and manager of our natural resources, means that the government has all of our wealth, and therefore all of our money. It is all under their control as trustees. The government has been managing our natural resources for about 150 years now. When are they going to send us our money? You see, instead of us having to pay the government anything, they should be paying us each and every year, once they have used the amount that is necessary to provide the services that we have authorized them to provide to us. Since we have not received our wealth or money, then I would have to presume that someone has stolen mine. What do you think has happened to yours? I would hope that at this point you now realize that the Income Tax Act of Canada is an unlawful act, having no constitutional support. In fact, being ultra vires the powers of the federal government given to it by the Constitution. Additionally, the income tax of all 9 provinces, that is, except the province of Quebec, is also unlawful in accordance with the Supreme Court of Canada ruling of 1950 in the Lord Nelson Hotel case, in which it stated that the powers of one level of government could not be transferred to the other. Therefore, since the federal government collects the provincial taxes in all 9 provinces other than Quebec, that makes it also unlawful. In addition to that, I hope you understand now that income tax, all other taxes, the court fines, license fees, speeding tickets, offense fines of every sort in this country are for the benefit of the banks. It is simply to extract money from our society and return it to its creator, the banks. That is the true prime purpose of taxation and all these other things that we've just talked about. We need to cut through the smoke and mirrors, however, to get to that. We first initially think about income tax as being a servicing mechanism for the national debt, when we get to the truth at least. But beyond that truth is the fact that taxes are really just to take money out of our society. And the money itself is a method by which the international bankers steal our wealth and our freedom. And finally, I hope you understand that the government of Canada is an unlawful criminal organization because it has no lawful authority to exist. Canada has no constitution because a constitution is a written document establishing and limiting the powers of government and is written and ratified by the people of the nation, which has never happened in Canada in our history. I would like to just read a quote to you from a former president of the United States about money. And it says this: "Whosoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. And when you realize that the entire system is very easily controlled one way or another by a few powerful men at the top, you will not have to be told how periods of inflation and depression originate." That was a quote by James Garfield, July the 2nd, 1881. And within a few weeks of making that statement, he was assassinated. We have to realize the awesome power and wealth of these international bankers and how they control us. And we must come together to do something about it. We individually can do nothing, but together we have all of the power.
This is a quote from the Magna Carta Canada, drafted by Eldon Warman. "We Canadians have been without lawful federal and provincial governments since 1931. We have had an imposter monarch and monarchy imposed upon us since 1931, while the crown of the City of London has surreptitiously put us into deeper bondage as a subservient colony, replacing the British crown as our colonial ruler. We have no lawfully established constitutions for our provincial governments, nor for our federal government. The so-called Constitution Act of 1982 is an absolute hoax and fraud. The fact that it was not ratified by the Canadian people and by the inclusion of the notwithstanding clause totally negates it as a constitution or as the supreme law of Canada. We have had these unlawful federal and provincial governments encumber our country and our natural wealth with massive debt based upon counterfeit money borrowed from foreign bankers. We have had Admiralty law imposed upon us by massive fraud of this government through unlawful and ultra vires legislation, licensing schemes, and unlawful judicial process. We have been totally deprived of our common law rights, those rights being converted unlawfully to privilege only for those willing to submit to slavery, subservience, and oppression. Judges use legal fraud and deception to entrap Canadians into their foreign maritime admiralty jurisdictions where there are no rights recognized. We Canadians are having our lives, careers, and families destroyed by the outlaw band of thugs, the CCRA, while the Canadian justice system maintains a blind eye to this piracy."
For additional information on this topic, go to your online resource center at www.pqionline.cc, click on Products and Solutions, and go to Disc Number 8.